Welcome to the 62nd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. Forgot what it was for a second. My name is Jamie Delaney and I'm your host. The reason why I say that is we just got done with the first annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference this past Saturday, and I have to report it was an amazing success. Before we get started on that, just in case you're new to the show, my name is Jamie Delaney. I'm a plant-based cardiologist. And that was my dog Samantha in the background. So we'll try to get this started with a little less background animal noise. But anyway, I'm a plant-based cardiologist in Southwest Florida in the Port Charlotte area, which is south of Tampa, north of Fort Myers. I'm also an endurance athlete. I like to do marathons and iron distance and half iron distance triathlons. Endurance-wise, I have a marathon at Napa Valley coming up. It'll be the second time I've run this for obvious reasons. It's in Napa Valley, California, which is a beautiful location. And we just got finished with the Plant-Based Nutrition Conference, so it's an exciting time, an exciting way to kick off the year. This conference featured Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn giving a fantastic lecture on preventing and reversing cardiovascular disease. His lovely wife, Ann Esselstyn, gave a here's how to do it, no bars avoided type, here's what to do. And she is very dynamic, amazing woman that's pulled off the cooking aspect of this plant-based nutrition for him and his family. And this is followed by a lecture by Dustin Rudolph, who's a PharmD. He wrote Empty Medicine Cabinet, so if you haven't checked that book out, please do. Dustin and his family were at the conference, and he gave the lecture, and he sold some books. That was great. I gave a lecture on the perils and pitfalls of becoming plant-based. And then we had a cooking demonstration by Evelise Capo, who's the foodpharmacy.com, and she's also a PharmD. And then we had a group panel discussion before leaving. We had two meals, the plant-based no added oil breakfast and lunch. The breakfast consisted of an oatmeal bar. There were greens. There was a tofu scramble. And at lunchtime, there were a variety of vegetables, greens, beans and rice, asparagus, zucchini. They had no added oil desserts, big giant fruit plate, and they had a big some oatmeal cookies and an apple crisp. So they did a fantastic job at the Isles Yacht Club. It was more than I could have hoped for a first time event. No complaints, you know, that's amazing in and of itself. We had 140 ticket sales. So people really enjoyed it, and they spanned from, you know, all the way from Naples to Orlando, and a few people from out of the area that were snowbirds from Texas and San Diego. So it was a really, really good turnout, and it was a great time. People asked me how long I had been planning it, and really started planning it in November, and just we just kind of picked the date that was a good date, and hopefully that some of our winter visitors would be here to participate, and I was lucky that things fell into place that Dr. Esselstyn and his wife could come at that time. So everything really, really worked out. So it was, I'm grateful and can't wait to do it again next year. So it we'll be able to say that there's a second annual plant-based nutrition conference, and hopefully to get some different speakers next year. And who knows? It may lead to more than one time a year, possibly make it a two-day event at some point. I just thought I'd talk a little bit about what my talk was about. I started the talk with, you know, so you want to be plant-based, because I was the 1 o'clock speaker, and I had to follow Dr. Esselstyn and Ann, who, you know, Dr. Esselstyn gave his you know, spiel on the science of endothelial dysfunction and how to how plants and how especially greens, and he advocates 6 cups a day helps generate nitric oxide through the bacteria in your mouth and helps heal your blood vessels, and the nitric oxide also decreases the size of your foam cells, so it allows that endothelium to lay back down and you to get more blood flow. He also explained the mechanism that, you know, even after being plant-based for a couple of weeks, if people have angina, it can go away. And it's not because the blockages go away in a couple of weeks, but it's because the blood flow in those tiny, tiny vessels inside the myocardium increase in diameter because they're exposed to nitric oxide. And those tiny blood vessels, because the flow increases four times the amount that, if the diameter increases by one, the flow increases by four. So you get a lot more blood flow, and people lose their symptoms really quick if they can take away the offending inflammation from animal and dairy and oil and add the nitric oxide producing mechanisms through dark green leafy vegetables. So that he really gave the science along that aspect. And then Dustin talked about reversing diabetes through a plant-based diet, but mainly he talked about the mechanism. So often, especially in this world of low-carb diets, people talk about the carbs. You have to watch the carbs. You have to watch the carbs. And I remember as a kid, and I don't know if I think I've alluded to it before, but both my grandmothers had diabetes. And the one grandmother I spent a whole lot of time with because my parents worked, and she took a medicine called Oranase, which was kind of like the Glyburide of today's medication. So it just helped you, actually helped the pancreas produce a little bit more insulin. So it kind of, in some respects, kind of just flogged the pancreas. But I remember as a kid being concerned, you know, would she be okay because of the diabetes, and her sugars were high. And she reassured me that as long as, because it was called sugar diabetes, you know, that as long as she avoided sugars and desserts, that she would be okay. The reality of it was she had a massive myocardial infarction at age 72. So it was clear from being okay. You know, back then there was no home blood glucose monitoring. You monitored the urine every 6 months if they went to the doctors. And as you know, maybe your sugar has to be well into the 200s before it spills into your urine. So that's not a very good test of how you're doing. But anyway, Dustin spoke of how the actual mechanism of diabetes relates to carbohydrates and fat intake. And the reality of it is it's a fat-driven disease. Our fat cells can only hold so much fat, and then they spill into the blood, which goes into the muscle. And then that kind of messes up the mitochondrial's ability to the mitochondrium's ability to handle glucose, which is the main fuel for a cell. So the glucose can't get in because the receptors are kind of blocked, mainly because of all the fat in the muscle cell. So you have all this glucose out in the bloodstream, which triggers more insulin production to try to push the glucose into the cell. And by having increased insulin levels, you break down fat in the body, so you have more fats in the bloodstream, so you get high triglycerides, which is often a precursor to frank diabetes. And then, of course, with all that insulin in the system, you know, the glucose finally makes its way into the cell, and then all of a sudden you have all this insulin and people feel horrible. They can actually get low glucoses, but they can feel very fatigued, like they want to lay down and go to sleep. They can have the shakes or the sweats, and so that's that symptom to eat more. And typically they eat high sugar something, or they're told to eat something high in fat, which drives all that process again. So Dustin made a good point at, you know, saying that it's not the sugar, it's the fat, and we need to get rid of the fat in our diet, both the fat we ingest via animals and saturated fat and oils and dairy, and we also need to get rid of the fat in our waistlines because the adipose fat is really what drives things. So by eating a whole food, plant-based, no added oil diet, we lean up. Our insulin receptors become healthy again, so we can absorb the glucose. And we're eating whole food, plant-based diet, so the insulin levels start to go down, and we quit having those spikes. So I think that was profound for people to hear that. Oftentimes in my office, you know, I'll talk to people about crackers, and it seems to be that people want to eat crackers because they're trying to hold back on eating calories. So they figure if they eat a few crackers, whether it's peanut butter crackers or Ritz cracker and cheese, that they're getting are crackers and peanut butter. They're getting some protein, and it's not as much calories as if they were to eat a bunch of fruit. But the reality of it is, when you eat a cracker, you're eating, even though it's a small bite-sized morsel, it's for the most part salt and fat and a bunch of other chemicals. So you would be even better off just eating a whole grain Ezekiel bread, or better yet, eating some fruit or vegetables than eating that cracker. And oftentimes I'll have people say, well, do the experiment. So eat a cracker with some peanut butter on it, or if they're still eating, you know, eat a cracker with whatever you eat on it and check your sugars, versus eat a couple pieces of fruit and check your sugars the next morning. And every time, the fruits won't drive the sugars like the fats do. So again, Dustin made a really good, he had a good slide demonstration of the mechanism of diabetes. And he was, you know, very encouraging that, you know, we can reverse diabetes. It doesn't have to be something that people get their medication after medication added onto. And he also looked, being a pharmacist, at the actual benefit versus the relative benefit. And oftentimes those are really misrepresented in the literature. So you may go from 2 events to 4 events, which is a 50% increase. But the reality of it is, in that number of people, you're ignoring the number of people in the study. So it's the actual risk is much less. 2 to be exact. So I think it was eye-opening for a lot of people. Anne gave some very good tips, you know, about kale and stripping them, using collards as your wrap instead of tortilla shells, making sure that you're getting the greens. She gave a recipe for steel-cut oatmeal, nutritional yeast, and kale. She also, gave some tips to avoid coconut milk, which is very fattening. You can use a little bit of coconut extract and some almond milk in place. That works just as well. And the need to really read the ingredients, because there's so much fat hidden in prepared foods. So if you're going to do a pizza, either make your own crust, or there's a crust made by Sammy that is a millet crust that's low in oil. And I don't go to Whole Foods, but I understand that Engine 2 has a line of burgers that are oil-free, and they have some cereals and different things that are Engine 2 certified that are actually oil-free that you could check out. So the real importance is to, you know, avoid the oil in your diet, as well as the meat and the dairy. So one thing unique about Punta Gorda, Florida, is if you look into history, you'll note that Ponce de Leon actually came to Charlotte Harbor way back when, on a trip from the Bahamas in the 1600s, looking for the Fountain of Youth. And so we talked about the Fountain of Youth as it pertains to a whole food plant-based diet, and specifically your telomeres. And the telomeres are the amino acid sequences on the end of your chromosome, that are the chromosome caps that protect your chromosomes. And when those get destroyed, a couple different things can happen. Either the cell itself can die, or the cell can start to replicate inappropriately and kind of be the source of a cancer, a stimulus for a cancer. So we don't want that to happen. Dean Ornish has done some studies showing that a whole food plant-based diet and good social skills and exercise can actually increase your telomere length, not decrease them and not keep them the same. So it's, again, very important to have a healthy diet to maintain your chromosomes and your cells. There's also a gene called APOE4. And this is the main cholesterol carrier in the brain. So people that have hereditary familial histories of one of these APOE gene forms have three times the risk of Alzheimer's than people that don't carry the APOE4 gene. But if you have both parents giving you the APOE4 gene, you have 9 times the risk of Alzheimer's. So that's kind of scary. And there's a lot of testing out there that you can get to look at your genetic markers. But you know, what good is genetic markers if you know something bad's going to happen, but you can't do anything about it? So I'm much more about looking into finding out how you can do something to help yourself. And turns out that Nigerians have a high incidence of two APOE4 genes, but they have a very low incidence of Alzheimer's. So it proves again that your genetic destiny doesn't always have to manifest itself. And it turns out that the Nigerians eat a very high fiber, plant-rich diet. So even though they have the APOE4 genes in double, they have a very low incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And people that eat a high plant-based diet, high cruciferous vegetables, greens, have a lower incidence of Alzheimer's disease and dementia. So it helps out. The other thing is to look at is TOR, which is stands for target of rapamycin. And it turned out that rapamycin is a drug given to kidney transplant patients to prevent rejection, but they also found out that those people had a very low incidences of cancer. And what happens is that the rapamycin actually decreases the activation of this TOR. So the other thing you can do to decrease the activation of TOR is cruciferous vegetables and a decreased caloric intake. But if you have a high diet that's high in fiber and cruciferous vegetables, then you don't have to worry near as much. The other thing is if you eat a lot of meat and dairy, it actually activates TOR. So meat and dairy really causes aging. So they heard all this science. And so when I gave my talk, I talk about, you know, the humor in it all, because we tend to take things so serious. And Will Tuttle, who wrote World Peace Diet, once said there are stages of being a vegan. You know, first you start to learn about it and what it is and, you know, the science behind it and all the things that can benefit. And then you become very, very enthusiastic and you want to share the world. So anybody that you can talk to, you tell them about being plant-based or vegan. And, you know, it's good for the environment. It's good for the animals. It's good for your health and everything it does. And then you become a stage 2B vegan where you're angry that the rest of the world doesn't change with you and you want everybody to be on your side. So the idea is to be kind of tolerant of other people and not be an obnoxious 2B vegan. And you don't necessarily have to be perfect all at once. You know, one of my slides shows a picture of a perfect refrigerator. And if you go on Pinterest, you know, you can search, you know, organization and refrigerator organization. And they have baskets and they have everything in neat little Tupperware containers. And they have the greens and vases. And sure, if you have enough room to put your greens and vases, it's a great way to handle things. And if you could separate all your vegetables and everything in it neatly in Tupperware, that's really great. But I don't think that's how most people live. I think most people, you know, tend to go on the fly. And so if I can get most of my greens in one drawer and most of my peppers and cucumbers and zucchinis in one drawer, then I'm doing pretty good. And I have my Mexican stock, like my limes and my avocados and my hot peppers. I have those in my meat drawer so I can keep those together. But after that, it's kind of, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, you kind of fight to do what you can. I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, your friends and becoming plant-based and people not liking you. And you know, I talked to a guy today in my office, and he had lost 70 pounds being vegan a couple of years ago, and he actually changed insurance, and I didn't see him for a couple of years, and he kind of went off being vegan, and he's back on, and he said, well, he gained, you know, 15 or 20 pounds when he wasn't very strict and wasn't vegan anymore, and talked about, well, now he's going to get back on the wagon because he had family, his daughter was in, and his grandkids were in. And it's like, well, you know, you can joke about it, why you want to kill your family. But I think if you, again, talk to your family, I'm doing this for my health and I want to be healthy. And if you really need to eat that way, you can, but I can't be the one cooking for you because I don't want to cook unhealthy for you any more than I want to eat unhealthy. So if you're going to do it, it's your choice. If you're an adult, then you can do your unhealthy meals, or you can cook the way you think you'd like to cook. As far as grandkids or children, you know, they can't vote. If they're less than 18 and they can't vote, I don't know why people think that the children should pick what they're going to eat, because they don't know what's good for them. So if they've been exposed to sugary things, they're going to want sugary things. So you have to break that cycle at some point. So if you don't have it around, they'll get hungry, they'll eat the real thing, and you're going to actually help them. You know, one of my jokes was, you know, if you go out to dinner and you order pizza, and you order pizza without cheese and meat, and you're embarrassed about doing it, you can always say that you're allergic to cheese. And the reality of it is, most people are allergic to cheese, because the microbes in your stomach react with the cheese, and you get all this gas production. And the fat and the cheese and the fat and the meat cause endothelial vasoconstriction, and your blood vessels tighten and your blood pressure goes up, and you can get indigestion or heartburn, which could be your heart actually burning because of the blood vessels constricting. And then if you eat that pizza at night and you have this normal cortisol surge, which everybody does at night, you can have a big rise in your blood pressure and have a heart attack. So the reality of it is, everybody's kind of allergic to cheese pizza. And all you have to do is take the cheese and meat off and increase the veggies, and you'll be okay. The other thing is, you know, blood pressure. We assume that blood pressure is a normal part of aging, but it doesn't have to be. People in rural areas don't have high blood pressure. And if your blood pressure is high, it means that the blood vessels, the endothelial lining, has constricted enough that the pressure is elevated and your blood vessels can't relax, and you have endothelial dysfunction. But as physicians, we kind of accept that that's part of aging, and we even call it, the billing code is essential hypertension, meaning that there's no real cause. Well, there surely is a cause. It's your blood vessels have damage to them, and you're taking too much salt intake. So if you decrease your salt intake, you decrease the blood vessels, and if you take more vegetables in, you'll make more nitric oxide, and your blood vessels dilate, and you'll fix the problem. I had a guy in the office today. I was like, well, do you really want to be diabetic? Do you really want to take blood pressure medicines? Because you can reverse it. Has anybody ever talked to you about reversing your diabetes or reversing your hypertension? And he's like, no. And it's like, well, why don't you? And he sat there and thought about it after a while. And, you know, the more we talked, the more he was on board. Let's go do it. Because I don't think people discuss it. And I don't think physicians realize we don't have to have hypertension. But just think what it would be like in a world that there weren't, that people didn't eat bad food. If we boycotted McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken and Chili's and all these bad places that have this oil and fat, then we made them eventually start to make food that's good for us. Because if you vote for your dollars, eventually they will make vegan, vegetarian options and low salt options. So we wouldn't need blood pressure pills. And just think that what that would do to the pharmaceutical industry, with all the blood pressure pills that were out there and all the advertisements that were out there and all the pills that we take for the side effects that blood pressure pills cause. I mean, it would be crazy. All the doctor's visits. Look at all the time we would have to do productive things, to do fun things. But doctors feel that it, you know, changing your nutrition, or maybe some doctors do, maybe some doctors, I just really haven't been educated that you actually can do it, or they don't believe you can do it until you try. And you really can once you try, if you can just get people to go no oil and go no fat. But, you know, if you can give somebody a medication quick and you can bill for it quick, well, then, you know, that's kind of the way it goes. We do things the easiest way, right? And a lot of doctors don't want to admit that the answer is changing your nutrition, because if they're going to eat poorly, and there's a lot of doctors that take the blood pressure medicines. They just, unfortunately, don't have to go to the pharmacy to get it. They can go to their own medicine cabinets. So again, if you've looked at medications and their side effect, or have watched TV lately, you'll know that if you take statins for your cholesterol, you can get muscle cramps, diabetes, you can lose your memory. Prostate meds, you know, they cause you, the blood vessels, to dilate so you can pass out when you stand up. That's one of the biggest reasons when people pass out in church, that they've taken the prostate medications. Diabetes medicines can cause prolific diarrhea. They can also cause sweats and low sugar when the blood sugar drops if they haven't eaten on a regular basis. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because they've got to eat. So they eat something sugary and fatty so their sugars don't drop. And then their sugars go up and they get more fat on it. And it just keeps, you know, the cycle keeps going and they need more and more medication. And then if you look at hypertensive medications, you know, they can make you pee your pants. You can become impotent. Those are great side effects as opposed to eating a whole food plant-based diet. And how about osteoporosis? We have to prevent that, even though that Norway, Great Britain, and the United States have the highest incidence of intake of calcium, and we have the highest levels of osteoporosis. So we're going to give you medicine. We're going to do bone density scans, but we're going to cause the medicine we give you is going to erode your esophagus and possibly even cause bone cancer, as opposed to just not eating a high-protein diet and eat your green leafy vegetables for your calcium and your beans for your calcium. Proton pump inhibitors, I used to think they were benign, but they change the acidic and they change the pH in your stomach. They change your gut microbes. You select out for bad microbes, and you can also lead to osteoporosis. So none of these drugs are without side effects. You know, a lot of people, you know, it's like, well, if I could exercise more, I'd be okay. The reality of it is we're still moving pretty good. It's just that we've increased our consumption so much. In 1900, we ate about 5 pounds of sugar a year. Now we eat 200 pounds a year in various things. Oil and fat, 4 pounds a year in 1900. Now it's 74 pounds in 2010. And, you know, there's fat in every processed food, so it's just not the fat around animals and cheese products. And cheese itself, 2 pounds in the year 1900 and 30 pounds in the year 2010. And I can attest to that as far as when I was growing up, the only cheese we really had around was the Velveeta, if you really want to call that cheese, and a little Swiss cheese and maybe a little cheddar cheese that you would buy in a tiny little block. But now cheese is on everything. It's in every packaged food. It's in every fast food. It's if you go out, it's on the salads. It's on the baked potatoes. It's everywhere. 131 pounds of fruit every year in 1900, now down to 11 pounds per year. And, you know, it's considered, you know, you're neglecting the child if they get fruit and not a cookie. You know, it's like, oh, poor thing, it's, you know, not getting a treat. But kids have very little exposure to different fruits. In 1900, we had 2,100 calories a day. Now we have 2,757 calories a day, which is a tremendous amount of food. I always tell my patients, you know, it takes about 3,600 calories in the whole to lose a pound. So if you know, burn 100 calories on your 1 mile walk, you really, it's going to take a lot of 1 mile walks to burn a pound to pound off. On the other hand, if you're 300 pounds, you need about 3,000 calories just to maintain your weight. So if you go down just to 2,500 calories a day, you're going to really lose weight. And again, the nutrient density is, you know, there's about 40 to 60% less nutrients in the food we eat now. A lot of people, the only vegetables they get are potatoes and ketchup, so there's very little nutrients. And the potatoes are in the form of French fries, not baked potatoes. Soft drinks, 53 gallons in 2010 versus none in 1900. The Gatorade industry is, you know, a billion-dollar a year industry. TV, we didn't have it. Meat, 140 pounds in 1900, now 210 pounds a year. Look on the package of a cracker and or throw a cracker, do an experiment. Go get some saltine crackers or whatever cracker you have sitting in your house and throw three of them outside and three or four of them outside and see over the how many days it takes them to disintegrate. I did this I didn't do it on purpose, but we were running one day and we saw these saltine crackers on the side of the road, and the next day they were still there. It rained a couple days later, they were still there. It was like a week or 2 weeks later that the saltine crackers were there, and they really hadn't changed in shape any. So it tells you how many chemicals and preservatives are in these things. It's really dangerous. And the other day I walked into Sam's Club, and the first thing they have, you know, now they have a huge line of stuff when you first walk in to kind of tempt you. And they have these big jugs of whey protein and cases of Ensure. Well, if the standard American diet is so healthy, then why do we have to supplement with whey protein? and Ensure. You know, they ask people that are plant-based, you know, where do you get your protein? But obviously they're worried about where people that eat meat are getting their protein as well, if there are all these different supplements. And the reality of it is, if you get 40 to 50 grams of protein a day, you're doing great. And that's plenty in vegetables and beans and whole grains. And then how about these, you know, lines of pharmaceuticals and vitamins and supplements? If things were so great, then we wouldn't need all this stuff. And on the subject of protein, well, what about the amino acids leucine and methionine? And the reality of it is, these two amino acids are found mostly in meat and dairy. And they lead to increased production of free radicals and oxidative stress and a lot of aging and increased stimulation of TOR, which was that aging enzyme that we talked about before. But if you look at the amount of leucine and methionine in vegetables, there's about 9 pounds of cabbage or 100 apples to equal the amount of leucine per serving of meat or dairy. So you're much safer to get your protein from vegetables than you are from dairy and meat as far as the toxicity. There was also this big shelf of probiotics. You know, so if you can have probiotics sit on the shelf for years and years, they're supposed to be alive. So there's no way that these things are alive on the shelf at Sam's. But even if they were alive and you eat this, you can't chase them with a cheeseburger and hope your gut flora is going to be okay just because you put a few thousand good microbes in your gut. You have to be able to nourish them. So if you're going plant-based and your family's not plant-based, then you know, you still need to be a little empathetic. Take some time for people to change. You know, you may have been on a bunch of fad diets over the years and, you know, Nutrisystem, Weight Watchers, Atkins. And so they might be a little reluctant to start another one at first. So, you know, kind of do it on your own and help people by cooking your own meals and doing your own experimentation. And they'll see what it looks good and it smells good and they'll want to try. And again, your grandkids, they should eat what you eat. You shouldn't have to change for them. And maybe challenge your siblings to see if you can be healthy either by exercising, the number of steps you get a day, or get a cookbook and share cookbook recipes and with your siblings or your friends and see who's tried different ones. Go through a good cookbook. You know, I have patients that have bought Ann Esselstyn's Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease cookbook, and the whole families went through it. So go through it together is a great way to do it, or have parties where you cook a bunch of different recipes from a whole food plant-based diet cookbook, and then, you know, everybody gets to try something. And even if you're picky, you know, identify some common ground. You don't have to eat something different every day. If you like a couple different vegetables, then eat them every day. And you don't like grains, then sneak in a few and work your way up, because you'll learn to like them, and you'll actually start to feel good, and you'll want more. And don't be fooled by, people say, oh, I eat a lot of kale. I'm making my own kale chips. Well, the kale chips are full of oil. So that's just a bunch of calories, and you're getting rid of all the nutrients when you bake something that high. So eat the kale the way it was supposed to. Chew it with a little balsamic vinegar on it. Steam it a little bit. But don't go making pretend foods with things. And take the meals that you like and make them plant-based. And it may require you to just substitute beans for the meat, but go ahead. Try a baked potato made Mexican style with, you know, corn and beans and tomatoes and peppers on top. Roast some tomatoes and stick on top of a potato. I love that. Just take a couple of potatoes and you can, tomatoes and just section the top of it out and put a little basil and pepper and put them in the broiler for about 20, 30 minutes at 350 and put that on top of your baked potatoes. Absolutely delicious. And the side effect of being plant-based will cause you to have less colds. You'll look younger. Your aches and pains will go away, especially when you give up the dairy. Your digestive processes will be fine and you'll never have to take Miralax again. And you'll have more energy and you'll probably be in a good mood because all the other stuff's working well. Some people just need to add in the good stuff and phase out the bad stuff, but you got to remember you're phasing out the bad stuff. So just like your closet, when you're cleaning out your closet, you can't go shopping and add more until you take off something. So be aware that you're going to take out something like chicken or beef and make it smaller, and that you're adding something. So you can really define what you're doing and be conscious of what you're doing. And completely eliminate the dairy. There's no way around it, so you just have to get rid of the dairy. Don't wean yourself off of dairy. Just get rid of it, and you'll feel better quickly because of it. And you're just going to have to avoid the processed food for a while, or actually forever. So don't eat anything processed, and you'll eliminate a lot of oil. Some people like things that are separate, not touching. Other people like casseroles. If you're a casserole person, then look up casseroles. If you like things separate, it doesn't mean you can't have three or four different vegetables. You can have cauliflower. You can have Brussels sprouts. You can have beans. You can have zucchini. You can just do every vegetable that you have and cook them all up. Then you have what you want for all week long. And take the lunch, you know, take the leftovers for lunch. When Dr. Esselstyn, we were going back to the airport, we were talking about, you know, a Cleveland Clinic. I said, is there any place you can... you can eat lunch? And he said that there wasn't any place, so Ann just packs anything in a pita. So whatever they're leftovers, she puts in a pita sandwich, and he eats that for lunch. So it doesn't have to be special. Last night we had a butternut squash that I had made into kind of a cheese sauce. So it was butternut squash and some nutritional yeast and a few cashews ground. And today I had it over my salad, and I had beets, and I had cauliflower, and I mixed it all together. And so I put that hot butternut squash over, it's kind of like a soup. I put it over my lettuce, and it, you know, kind of made it warm. It was a cold day, so it was really nice. You can also look at the dressings that you like that have oil in them and just make them without oil and take out the chemicals. It's pretty simple. I had a table in my slide talk, one column of greens, one column of beans, one column of vegetables, and one column of grains and starch. And if you have to, make yourself those columns, and every day or for a week, you pick out one from every column or one from each of the two and add more vegetables. So you can do one grain, one bean, one grain or starch, and add two or three vegetables and make that your dinner. It's a great way to plan your meals. And just have that on the table, you know, of what you're going to pick. Some meals that we like are vegetable soup, potato soup, bean soup, mushroom soup, carrot and ginger soup. We like cabbage rolls, and sometimes we don't really make them into the roll. We'll just put the cabbage and the rice and the beans all together. Pasta with vegetables is another one. We do eggplant with sauce and mushrooms, or Thai style with some chili peppers, and make them more of a brown sauce. We like to make burgers out of beets, out of quinoa, out of bean. We like to just do simple meals like green beans and sweet potatoes. We make burritos out of beans and rice. We also make burritos out of artichoke, spinach, and mushrooms. And we do a bunch of stir-fried vegetables. So there's a variety of things you can get, but it comes down to it. You'll pick the meals you like, and you don't have to really be too creative all the time. You can be creative on the weekend if you want. There'll be a lot of naysayers out there, but lead by example. Your health speaks volume. If you have something that people want, then they're more likely to go after. So if you're lean and healthy and have lots of energy, people want to know what you have, just like your new hairstyle or just like your new car. And then at the end of the day, you can only prevent your own dementia, your own cancer, your heart disease, and stroke, to name a few of the different diseases that are brought about by a poor diet. So lead by example by being healthy. And you have to treat your body as if it was your most precious possession, because it is. And your kids, they're your most precious possession too, right? So you want to treat them as well as you can, so you don't want to feed them junk food. And look into having a little bit of a backyard garden. It'll make you feel good too as you're out there doing a little gardening. So that was pretty much what I talked about during our conference, and I hope you got something out of that, since you may not have been at the conference, and if you were, I hope it was a refresher. And I hope next year you'll be able to join us at our second annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. I'm still having classes in my office. You know, there's six classes per session, and they're an hour long, and I'm doing some cooking demonstrations. And if anybody would like help over line or Skype, I think I could do that as well, and we could work through your diet where you are and how to change things. So give me a buzz at drdelaney.com or jamiedelaney@gmail.com. I'd be happy to speak with you. And until next time, I have a bodybuilder that's vegan. I think that'll be an interesting change, and a lot of different people in this new year to interview. So I hope you're healthy. I hope you found some tips. And I hope if you're in the snow, it melts and you don't lose your power and you shovel and get your steps and get a lot of energy and exercise. Stay warm, stay dry, eat a nice bowl of vegetable soup. Take care. Good night.